Good Erev Shabbos, everybody. This week is Parshas Chaye Sara, and the title of today's shir is "The Good News Is You Get What You Deserve. The Bad News Is You Get What You Deserve." So, with that interesting title, we'll go into explaining what we're talking about over here. So, there's something that we notice about relationships, which we learn from the search for a wife for Yitzchak. Obviously, Avram has a lot of concern about who's going to marry his son, and he makes Eliezer give an oath, "Shelo tikach levni mibno saknanim," because their morals and character, etc., are a problem. But very specifically, when Eliezer, who is representing Avraham and his wishes, when he's seeking out a mate for Yitzchak, he engages in some kind of test. There's a whole machlokas rishonim based on the Gemara, whether what Eliezer did was considered divining, whether it was nichash or not. But the simple pshat that many mefarshim learn is that it was not divining. It was actually a real test. It was a test of moral character. What was the test? So the test was that in some ways to see her ability, Rivka's ability to do chesed, and not only her ability to do chesed, but to do chesed in a very thoughtful, unsolicited way. So when Eliezer asks if I could drink, and then she offers also for the camels to drink, that shows a degree of, I think the Yiddish word is Übergegebenkeit. My Yiddish is not great, so if it's wrong, don't make fun of me. But it means like to be overly generous, to be very giving. And there's all kinds of tests within that that some of the mefarshim learn. So, for example, he doesn't, when she offers him to drink, she doesn't mention the camels yet, so he shouldn't feel rushed. And only after he drinks, she offers to give to the camels. There's all kinds of nuances that they read into. But essentially, it was a personality test, a character test. Today there are companies that hire psychologists to do personality tests about their employees to see if they have certain attributes, loyalty, honesty, etc. So here was a test. But let's take a look at what the Kli Yakar says very specifically. This is Perchav Dalad Pasag Yud Dalad. Kli Yakar says, on the word Oso Hochachta, she is the one that has been proven, Mikam Lomar Eliezer. From here, Eliezer learned, Shelo Badak Es Rivka Ki Im B'mida Zo. Eliezer was only looking for this mida, im yesh la ayin tova, if she had a generous heart. Ayin tova really means like a good eye, but it means that you're very generous. The gomelos chasadim, and she does kindness. The kach omar, that's why he said to himself, ani lo etva mimena ki im shetiten li lishtos. I'm only going to ask if she will give to me to drink. V'hoyim toshev li shesei. And if she answers, drink, and I'll also give to your camels, then we see for sure that she is one who is a master of gemilos chasodim, that she gives more than I ask. And therefore, then, she would be the one that has been proven to be the right one for your servant Yitzchak. Ki chol beiso lavush bigde yeshe labrios, because the whole values of the house that Yitzchak came from was taking care of other creatures, other people. V'razal amru, and then he goes on to interpret Chazal in a very interesting way. The Gemara in Tainus on Chaf Dalad Amud Aleph, kol kala sheinah yafos Kol gufein sarf badika. A woman who has beautiful eyes, the rest of her body does not require inspection. So the pasha pshat is, if someone has beautiful eyes, they're pleasing enough, and probably the rest of their body is pleasing. The Klei Yarkas says that's not demonstrated to be an experience. You could have a woman with very beautiful eyes who the rest of her is not very beautiful. So he said what Chazal were really saying is that she had an ayin yafa, not that the eyes were literally beautiful, but she had a generous eye. And that generosity shows that all the character midos are good, meaning from the mida of generosity, one sees that all the character midos are good. And he goes on to say that this is the binyan av, this is from everything, it comes from there. Okay, so this is, by the way, it's interesting. The Gemara phrases it in a way that could be misleading, but there's a lot of times Chazal do that. They don't speak explicitly. And, you know, you might wonder, why don't they speak explicitly? Right? Well, why do they speak in mysteries or in riddles? Why not just say that a woman that has good midos, a woman that has good midos is a good choice for a wife? Why speak in this way where people could be misled? And there, when it comes to these agadas, there's a couple of approaches. On one level, you could say that it's almost like it's meant to be understood on the degree that the person is holding by, meaning there is a kernel of truth, even to the pashup shot, right, that a beautiful woman, if her eyes are beautiful, that likely the rest of her is beautiful, or perhaps even if not, the eyes are such an important feature that it still is beautiful. So like on one level, they're dispensing advice to simple folk, and then to the people who are more deep and insightful, Chacham Umevin Midaito would understand that they're not just talking about a physical attribute. That's certainly one possibility, and oftentimes you find that Chazal were reluctant to speak about the nuances explicitly, because I suspect that a lot gets lost in translation, that if you try to put it down, it's open to a lot more misinterpretation. You might think the opposite. You might think that it's open to misinterpretation if you're not specific, but it's not really true, because basically the students were trained to read between the lines and to look at the essence of the meaning. And then when you do that, you have a much greater grasp of the overall ethic that they're trying to suggest. While if they spelled everything out literally, people might be following their advice in a very literal rote sense and not really get the deeper understanding. But anyway, regardless, the Klei Yarkas is saying a very important point. He's saying that having an ayin yafa, being generous and being Gomelos Chasadim is the key characteristic, and that's what Eliezer was interested in, and that's what we should all be interested in. So it's an important thing for us to understand. For those of us that are still looking for spouses, you want to see, is there a real generosity? And I think that, you know, in my own experience with working with couples, I would say that the ability to be generous, but not just generous in a sense of giving, but being able to let go and forgive and being able to see things from the other person's perspective is indeed one of the most essential qualities for a successful relationship. But this begs the question, and that's what I wanted to get into today for a couple of minutes, because I think oftentimes shalom bias issues and compulsive sexual behavior are often tied in all kinds of ways. And this begs the question, a person listening to this year might say to himself, well, that's nice to hear, but I'm already married, and I don't think my spouse is really Gomel Chesed or Gomel Chesedim. I don't think he or she has those midos, and now I'm stuck. You should have told me this Klei Yarkas, you know, before I got married. So that's an interesting question, and I have a response to that. Let's and that really brings us back to the title of the shiur, right? The good news is you get what you deserve. The bad news is you get what you deserve. And it's much more complicated than that, and I think also more hopeful. So don't despair. But let's start out with a couple of foundational texts. So the Gemara in Sota on Beis Amud Aleph lets us know that when Reish Lakish began teaching Gemara Sota, many of the Amoraim had the habit that, you know, before they would go into something very deeply, they would start with some agadata, something that would be Moshech, the lev of the Talmidim. So when Reish Lakish would start teaching Maseches Sota, he would start with Ein mezavgin lo la'adam isha ela lefi ma'asav. A person only gets a woman based on his merit, based on his own deeds, his ma'asim tovim. Or the opposite. Shenemar, as it says in Tehillim, in Kapitel Kuf Chaf Hei, Ki lo yanuach shevet harasha al goral hatzadikim. The lot of the evil will not befall the lot of the righteous. So, meaning that if somebody finds themselves with a spouse who seems to be really impossible and difficult and of poor midos, Reish Lakish is letting you know that this is a reflection of something that's going on inside of you, and that you were matched with somebody who is basically equal to you in some vital way, for better or for worse. But this is not a punishment. Punishments are not punishments. Punishments are opportunities. What's classically seen as a punishment in a very primitive sense is really HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of guiding us. So when you experience something that's difficult, it's not just a punishment, it is an opportunity to somehow be shaped by the experience to respond positively. I don't remember which shiur, but years ago on one of Rabbi Victor Miller's tapes, he spoke about, like, even the curse that Adam Harishon had, Bezeis Apecha Tocho Lechem, with the sweat of your brow you're going to eat bread. It wasn't a curse, it was a takana, that as man had a Yetzirah and had opportunities for many distractions and to do evil, he needed something substantial to direct his energy toward. And by having to work for his food, it would tie him down in a meaningful and positive way to the world, so that he would have the ability to master his Yetzirah. And so what appears to be a curse is really a blessing. And similarly, although it does say, right, one only gets a spouse that they deserve, it means not just deserve in a bad way, it means that this spouse is, or the challenges that one is experiencing in the relationship is is a product of what you really need to do. So let's take a look at this a little bit more, because there are more psukim that speak to this point. There's a pasuk in Mishlei, Perachov Zion, pasuk Yates, Kamayim Haponim Laponim, like the water shows a reflection of the face, Kein Leva Adam LaAdam, so too is the heart of one man to another. So the Mefarshim vary a bit. You could look at Rashi and the Mesudas David, they vary a bit in how to interpret it. Either it means that as is in your heart, your friend will respond to you, right? Or what's in your friend's heart is a reflection of what's in your heart. They're very similar, but they're not quite the same. In other words, is it that's what you're going to get back, or is it that is what it is, right? So in other words, if you have hatred in your heart or you have kindness in your heart, your friend will respond back to you that way. Is it that? Or however your friend responds to you shows you what's in your heart. It's very similar. And both of them are obviously very related to the marriage relationship, where one thinks that it's the other person's fault, and it might be. One thinks that all, you know, my spouse is not gomel chesed. I wasn't as lucky as Yitzhak to have an Eliezer to go find the right person for me. But the ongoing experience is a continuous interaction, and that how one behaves is reflected in the experience of the other, and that basically things can be corrected as well. Now, there's a Chazon Ish that I think is very relevant to this as well. And one of the fundamental principles in Sefer HaBitachon that the Chazon Ish makes, which, by the way, not everybody is in agreement with, but this is the Chazon Ish's position, that Bitachon doesn't mean faith that everything's going to work out okay. It doesn't mean, so in other words, even though some people hold that is precisely what Bitachon means, that you could believe that things are going to be good for you, and that in and of itself will help make things good, the Chazon Ish says that's not what it is, because we're not in charge, and just because we want something doesn't mean if we have faith that it'll happen, that it's going to happen. So what does Bitachon mean, according to the Chazon Ish? Bitachon means an absolute conviction that everything that is happening is a direct will of God. Whatever is happening, Hashem wants to happen to you. So now, at first glance, that sounds quite pessimistic, because it's saying that you can't hope that anything that you want will happen. You just need to know that what's happening is Hashem's will. But it's really actually very optimistic, because imagine that one is experiencing what we'll call, quote, a punishment. Let's say a very difficult spouse or any other situation in life that's very painful. If one believes that with absolute certainty that what's happening is being directed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in response to something, in response to something we're doing or not doing, that means no matter how hopeless and no matter how irreversible the situation seems, it's not true. Because if we were to adjust, if we were to change, if whatever degree our merit would change, then the situation is instantly changeable, terrifying. So the feeling that one, you know, is in a hopeless situation in a marriage or in any other position is really coming from a feeling of fatalism. When if you believe that what's happening to you is happening to you because you need to go through something, and that if you accept the message of what you're going through and you allow that to change and impact on your character positively, then the opportunity will be presented, and it's not fatalistic. Then a whole new set of circumstances can happen. And indeed, people who are in recovery will tell you there's certainly many, many situations that appear horrible and are very painful. And oftentimes in the early stages of recovery, it can be very rough. The early stages, because without having whatever it is that a person was using to soothe themselves, the whatever drug or whatever process that they were addicted to, that they were soothing themselves from, it can be very rough. But they will find, right, that as they work through and as they stay in their recovery, a whole new kind of relationship and a whole new kind of life emerges. And oftentimes they do find that the relationship with their spouse changes dramatically. Perhaps, as I said, at first it might be worse because of all the triggers and all the anxieties and the depression and all the things that the obsessive or the addictive behavior was warding off. But eventually, something much more positive can very well emerge because of just what we spoke about. Now, leaving that alone, there are just a couple of unrelated ha'aras I had from this week's parsha as well, which are not necessarily related to what we spoke about before, but I thought it was just interesting. One is that Rashi notes, when it describes describes Rivka, says she's a nar basula asher lo yida'a le'ish. She was a virgin who had not known a man. So there's a certain kind of yitur lashon. There's some extra words there, and Chazal understand, and Rashi is really quoting the Medrash, that the Canaanite women, they had a kind of false virtue. They're very protective of their physical virginity, so that they would not allow their basulim to be violated until they were married. But otherwise, whether it was according to some Bish Lokadarka or Maisi Chidudim, the point is that they engage in other kinds of sexual activity. Not that different from what some young people would do today, right? Would claim a kind of abstinence, a strange kind of virtue, technically abstinent, but not truly abstinent. And I just thought that's an interesting ha'ara, that the more things change, the more they stay the same. So this is what the Benos Kanan did. Obviously, Rivka was much better, and that's the point, that Rivka was not in any way known to another man, that she was in all senses virtuous. Just a ha'ara. Another interesting ha'ara from this week's parasha is that while this Rivka is extremely tznius, right, and she had not have any kind of relationship with any other man, she meets what seems to be a total stranger, and she's quite generous. She offers him to drink, and gam lugmalecha eshav. So I just think it's a very interesting juxtaposition that here you can have a person who's very tznius, and very mindful of her boundaries and maintain her boundaries, and yet also be a gemelas chesed, be very generous-hearted and very connected to people. And I think that dichotomy is not always very easy to achieve, right? There are people that are very good-hearted and they have poor boundaries and they end up being generous in a way that's not good. It was said, I don't want to say about who, but it was said about a certain person who was involved in Kirov, that he was, Makarev Rechokim, and, it was quipped, that's not the only people he was Makarev. So there is that tendency and that danger that, if you're open-hearted and you really mean well, you could also be too open. And then there's also the tendency in the opposite direction. You have people that, in order to maintain their boundaries at Sneas, they will behave in a very rigid and removed way from people, which can be very hurtful to the others. I'm not telling you specifically which way to go on this, but a person could be very makpid, not to look women in the eye, a glance at them. But let's say you're the Rav of a shul, and the women also want hadracha and want hashpa, and some women might really feel very, very distanced and very hurt. So it's a complicated inyan, and I don't have all the answers. I just wanted to be ma'orer. I think it's very interesting how Rivka is able to master both pieces of it, right? That she is able to be generous and outgoing, and at the same time also protects her virtue and her tznius. I'm going to shut off the recording, and then we'll see if anybody has any comments.